Hey, Rick Barraza, welcome to Creative Coding with Windows 8 JavaScript applications using processing. Hopefully you made it past the sine and cosine tutorial. Look at things such as golden ratio and creating circles and creating spirals using these types of things. There's one last piece of trigonometry that we're going to look at in this lesson. It'll be much easier. We're going to use a special function that uses the atan2 function, or a tangent. The relationship of to find a direction between two things, you'd figure out what the triangle is between those two things, and then we'll show you how to use the x and y offsets, throw it into the special tangent function, and it'll pop right back out the angle of rotation for you. It's actually pretty neat. So let's jump right into code this time. In our startup function, it's the same framework we've been using for all of our projects. We start off with width and height. In our setup, we're defining the stage width and height, doing a couple parameters. We have a draw animation loop this time. Right now, we're just coloring the background to black. And we've also wired up a pointer move function so that if we use our mouse or touch or pen on a Windows device, we are setting the target X and target Y. We're also, instead of it setting it just equal to E offset X, we are using the easing algorithm so that wherever we're quickly touching, the target X will be easing toward where we go. So it provides a slightly more fluid, slightly more elegant animation to following the pointer. As with most things, the first thing we're going to do is create a class that will define what our visual is that we're going to drop on the stage. In this lesson, we're going to go ahead and we're just going to call this a block. So let me add some room here. I'll create my class block. And with most visual elements, we're going to have an X property, we're going to have a Y property. They're not going to be animating because we're going to create a grid of these visual blocks. So we'll look at creating grids of elements, putting them stationary, and then this stationary grid, we're going to go through and animate their rotation so that all of the blocks will always be pointing toward where the cursor is. So we don't need to have any VX, any velocity X or speed X or speed Y this time, just an X and Y. We're going to, when we do draw them, we're going to be playing a little bit with their width and with their scale. And of course, since this is about rotation, every block is going to have its own rotation. And then let's go ahead and also give them, define two colors this time. We'll give them a base color, and this will just be a solid white at full alpha for now. And then we'll give them a detail color. And this will also be, for now, solid white at full alpha. Every block will take care of its own rendering. And as we saw in the last lesson, when we were creating petals in the Fibonacci sequence and that golden ratio and that golden spiral, we're going to be doing the same thing. Since we're going to be dealing with scale and rotation, the rendering stack, we're going to, the first thing we do, we'll do a push matrix. And the last thing we do will be a pop matrix. And this will allow us to position every block rotating the stage while then making sure that we clean up after ourselves and undo all of the rotations we needed to do to draw this particular block at this particular scale at this particular rotation. Right? So this is just the nature of dealing with drawing in JavaScript or in processing. It's always about the background. You're doing a push matrix, translating the stage, rotating the stage, and then cleaning up after yourselves by popping it back out. So whereas we would normally draw an ellipse using the this.x or this.y, we will now be translating, just as we did in our previous lesson. We will translate this.x, this.y, which basically moves the drawing context under the pen instead of moving the pen around. We are going to say, first, let's use our base color. We're also going to want to rotate whatever our rotation is. So this looks very similar to our petal code in our previous lesson. We're picking a fill, we're rotating it, and then we're going to, let me spell it right this time, draw a rectangle that, ignoring the rotation, would be starting a little bit off. Let's see what we're doing here. This wide, this, we should probably change this to wide, not width. So every block is going to have a property called wide. And if we're going to animate it's within the draw loop, when it's rendering itself, it's going to be drawing a rectangle starting at zero, going as wide as we're setting it. So as we animate its width value, the square is going to be growing longer, but its height right now is going to be the same. We want it to be 2 pixels high. So if we want to center it around the origin, we would first move up, go up a pixel, and then draw the box, draw the rectangle 2 pixels down. This will center it along the Y, but the X is going to be anchored at zero, and its width will be however we set that width to. The default wide property it has is 5 pixels. So this will create a 2x5 square, left aligned to the X axis, but center aligned to the Y axis. Once we have the square, let's go ahead and change to the detail color. And then we'll go ahead and draw an ellipse. Now again, we're not using this.x or this.y because we've already translated the page. So we're just drawing the ellipse at our local origin, which would be 0, 0. And we'll make a 3 pixel wide, 3 pixel high ellipse right in the middle. Then we pop matrix. Okay, so that's what our block will look like. If we can visualize this in our head, we're going to have a circle right at our origin, our 3 pixel wide, 3 pixel high circle, and then it's going to have a little bar shooting out that as of right now is 5 pixels wide. So it's a circle in the origin with a rectangle shooting out to the right. So that's all the code we have for our block. The rest is all on setup and on our rendering. If we come up to setup, let's go ahead and start creating a grid. Now, if we're going to create a grid, let's create some variables outside of that so that we know what we're dealing with. So I'm going to create a variable called rows, and I'm going to want 12 rows in this case, and that could be whatever value you want. And I'll create one called columns or calls, and I'll do 12. So we're going to make a square. I'm going to want spaces in between each one of these blocks. Now, I've already said that the rectangle is going to be 5 pixels wide by default. So let's have enough space that as I space them aside, there's enough gap between them. So I'm going to create this variable. I'm going to call it margin. I'm going to start that off at 10. Now, I'm going to create, let's create an array to hold our blocks. So if we're going to create an array, let's create a variable called a total blocks. It'll be 144. 12 times 12 is 144. So I'm just kind of go ahead and doing the math already. And then we create on our array of block elements. We'll call it blocks, of course. And say you are a new block array made up of total blocks. Okay. Just as we've done on several demos before, we're starting to see that a lot of these same techniques for doing radically different experiences all comes down to these same few basic concepts. You're having this array of elements, you're updating them, you're rendering them on the stage. Same thing here. We have our array of visual elements. We know we're going to set them up at some point, either on a mouse move or on a setup function. And during our draw loop, we will iterate and animate certain properties. Now what we're going to be doing here is the grid that I'm going to want to put on the stage is going to take up a certain amount of space. I don't want to necessarily fill the entire width or height. So I'm going to define a variable we're going to calculate called rows space, one called columns space. Again, I don't want to fill up my entire canvas because I have 1200 pixels, right? I have 1200 pixels by 600 pixels on my background. I actually want to say within this entire space, this is how big I want my grid space to be for my rows and my column space to be, right, for my grid that I make. So during setup, the first thing we should do is pretty much define how big we want that grid to be. So once we've defined all these things, we can say our row space is going to be equal to width minus origin divided by rows. Let's think what that's doing. Remember, I want that padding. That padding also counts on the sides, on the edges too. So if our entire stage is 1200, then we're going to go 1200 minus 10 for our padding, and then divide that by the total number of rows I want. This is going to allow me to scale it out to my canvas while leaving space in the edges for a margin. That's going to define my total rows space. My total column space is going to be the exact same thing, only instead of width, we're going to be doing height minus the margin, and then divide it by the number of columns. So this will basically define my entire playable field. This way, if I ever want to change the size of my canvas, my grid will always work to whatever size of my canvas I'm looking at. Now, there's one other thing we're going to want to do, and let's see if I should set it up. Okay, we're going to create a... first, let's go ahead and draw. Let's draw the grid first before we make it too interactive. We're going to... let's color it a little bit. So we'll do what we've done before with setting up a R, G, and B value. And I'm also going to create on the outside a count value. Now normally, let's explain what this is going to be for. In our previous loops, when I wanted to create something, I would do something like this, right? But since we want to create columns, I don't want to create it just in one big loop. I want to make it easier to make sense to me. So I'm not going to have just one variable. I'm going to have a nested for loop. On the outer one, I'm going to be for int x is equal to 0, while x is less than rows, x plus plus. This is going to get me all of my columns or rows. And then I'll say for y is equal to 0, while y is less than columns, y plus plus. Okay? So at this point, if we were to draw this in a grid, we'd create a block. We'll call it block, and that is equal to a new block. I'm going to say my block.x is equal to, and then here we say we'll start off with the margin because we want that padding, plus x times row space. We're going to say block.y is equal to start off with the padding, and then whatever our y happens to be times call space. Now again, this is the entire length. This works because x is growing from 0 to the number of rows. This row space that we've defined is basically how wide is every row going to be? How wide should every cell be? Or how high should every cell be? That's what these worked out. If here's the total amount of real estate we have, here's all the rows we got to account for. Every row, the space of every row is going to be this value. So we're doing that here. Starting on the padding, whatever x I'm currently on, move that many row spaces this way. Whatever y I'm currently on, starting at the padding, move that many height spaces that way. So doing this right here should draw us up a grid. And in order to do that, let's go ahead and do a block. We're going to set its rotation right now, though we're not going to use it. And then let's drop it into our array. Now again, here's where it comes in, where count came in. What do I use here? I can't use x or y because these are all nested loops. An easy way of just doing this, and there are different ways of doing this, but I'm just going to set up a count variable. And when I'm down here, I'm going to say count is equal to block. So if I'm doing a nested loop, I could try and do some calculation using x and y, but I'm just set up an int. It's going to start at 0, then the first one will be at 0, the next one will be at 1, and on. So this is just an easier way. If I'm not using one big for loop, if I'm using a nested for loop and I don't have I anymore, just keep track on another variable. Makes it a lot easier. Once we have this in our draw command, let's go ahead and draw these. Now nothing's going to be animated yet. But now, in our draw command, we can go, well, we can use our total blocks. Because they're already positioned on stage, we just need to loop through them and draw them. So we will do blocksi.render. Okay. At this point, let's step back, we've created a block class. Has a lot of properties we're not using yet, but the important ones are it has an x and y. And on its render stack, it's already using its matrix so that once we start rotating and scaling, it's all good to go. But we're basically translating to wherever its x and y is, and then drawing it right there, a circle with a stick sticking out of it. We are setting up a total of 144 blocks right here, where I have a nested for loop so that we can move along the x, and every time it does a y, it's going to move to the next x, and it's going to keep doing this, and this is going to build us a grid of blocks, all evenly spaced across whatever range we have. We're throwing them into our blocks array so that on our draw loop, for right now, we're telling blocks basically draw yourselves. Nothing will be animated, but they're still being told to draw 60 frames a second. Let's run it and see if any of our code has bugs. There we go. So all of the blocks are currently being drawn, little small, and if you were to zoom in or really peer in, you'd see that it has a tiny little circle and has a tiny little 5-pixel shim sticking out of it. Okay, let's start adding a little bit of excitement to this. One of the things we want to do is we want it to react to wherever the mouse is. But first, let's come back to its setup. One of the things we're going to do is if we have our stage, let's figure out kind of what's the maximum longest while the pointer's on the stage, it can be from any one element. So if you had an element up at 0, 0, kind of what's the farthest away your mouse can be on the canvas and have it still count? Well, that would be ending up being taking the diagonal of the stage, right? So let's come up and let's start storing this up here so we can save it only one time. I'm going to come up here and I'm going to call it float, and I'm going to say sketch diagonal. I can define sketch diagonal. Once I come down over here, once I've defined my row space and my width and height, the sketch diagonal, and that's just the Pythagorean theorem as we knew, it's a squared plus b squared, right, equals c squared. We don't have to be that exact. Again, we're doing this creatively, it's fine. That square root can sometimes hurt us. So let's just do a width times height, and we're going to dial it down a little bit. This is one of the best things on Creative Code is once you get an understanding of what the math concepts are, you can really start fudging the numbers, and it's okay. Some of the best happy accidents come this way, right? I mean, you're fudging some numbers, you're tweaking it out. So here we're getting a general, the square of the diagonal of the stage, and then we're just clamping it down. We'll be able to tweak this number toward the end and see as we tweak it up or down what effect ends up happening. But for right now, we have this kind of generic, this is kind of the maximum farthest away we want you to think of being taken into account. So once we're doing this, we've done all the stuff with color here. Let's also start popping that into our block down here. So once we've placed them in X and Y, let's use the map function to color every to cover every element. So our R is going to be map whatever our X currently is between 0 and rows, and return that mapped value from 0 to 255. And then same with B. Map whatever my Y is between 0 and my columns between 0 and 255. Now, this isn't their X and Y positions. Just to remember, this is the X and Y counters up here. We're doing it inside the for loop. So we're not saying block X and block Y. We're saying wherever you are currently in this loop from 0 to rows, map wherever I am between 0 to rows to 0 and 255. Make sure you catch that. Once we have that, we can say block.baseColor is equal to, and then let's rewrite it using these new values that we pulled aside. Okay, we still have our block rotation somewhere right there. Okay, and our setup function is done. If we run this now again, we're going to see we're adding a little bit more color. We're creating the grid, and now if you look closely, it's starting up at white, and as you move toward the edge, it's getting into this magenta color. Right, so we're getting this easing of color as we move to the right and as we move down. Let's do something about that scale because it's awfully small. At this point, it all comes down to our draw function. Don't forget, we've been easing target. So even though we're running it and nothing's happening, as we're moving our pointer around, our sketch is keeping track of it, and it's very gracefully keeping track of it. We just keep drawing all these points, and they're just sitting there. They have their single colors, but we have this target variable moving around. We've also defined the sketch diagonal. Using those two things, this is what we're going to do. For every point, we're going to say, figure out how far away you are from where the mouse currently is. And based on how far or how close you are, change your width. So let's do that. Inside of our draw function, we're going to say, what's the difference between where you are and where the target is? So what's the difference of your x will be equal to basically AU block, whatever block I'm currently talking to, your x minus target x. That's your delta. What's your delta x? What's your difference x? Your delta y would be equal to wherever your y is minus wherever the pointer is. So if I'm very, very close to a particular block, my delta x is going to be very, very small. The farther away I am, my delta x, my difference, is going to be very big. Now, as I move up or as I move down, right, if I'm off to the side, my y difference could be zero, but my x difference could still be high. That's why we're keeping track of both of these, to separate the x and the y deltas between where my block has been placed on the stage and where my target is, where my pointer is currently moving. Now let's start making the width dynamic. We're going to make the width equal to okay, so remember how in Sketch Delta we had the Pythagorean theorem, right? If you have the height and length of a triangle, you know that you can get the hypotenuse by saying a squared plus b squared equals c squared. We all probably did this at school at some point. And we were kind of cheating. We were just saying, you know, a squared plus b squared. So this is width times width, or width squared plus height squared. If we wanted the diagonal in pixels, we would need to take the square root of this. But there's no reason to do this because we don't really care what the number is. We simply want to care relative to how far it can be. That's why when we're dividing it, we're keeping the squared so we can get to go ahead and just keep this squared. Otherwise, we'd be taking the square root of this just to divide it by the square root of this. That'd be doing two square roots when you don't really need to. It's the exact same ratio. As long as you don't square root this guy, you don't need to square root this guy, and you save yourself some cycles. So wherever our current position is to where our pointer is, what's the difference in x? What's the difference in y? So for this particular triangle, how far away are we from this particular triangle squared? And that's relative to how far away we can possibly be squared. This starts giving us a ratio. It doesn't matter that the numbers aren't exactly in pixels. It all washes out. What's the square hypotenuse of where I am now to the pointer versus the square hypotenuse of from 0, 0 all the way to the edge of the canvas? And then we added a little fudge factor in there. This, since we're subtracting it by 1, we're saying that if I'm right on top, if the pointer is right on top of me, right, if there's no difference, if this is 0, 0 divided by 1,000, right, it's still 0. If I'm, the closer I get, the less of a distance there is, the more this stays 1. The farther away I get, the closer this gets up to sketch diagonal. So the closer this comes to 1, and this then gets down to 0. So the farther I am, my width is going to shrink. The closer I get, my width is going to grow. Since we multiplied the sketch diagonal by a fraction, it will actually let us not, when you get far away, it gets so small it actually starts popping out the other end. But we'll see that. So let's just run this now, see what happens. Oh, of course, we're not setting it. My fault. We've done all the math here. We've calculated the width, but we need to set that on the block. We were simply calculating it. We need to tell each block, your new calculated width is equal to whatever this width was from 0 to 1, but then times times your call space. Because we were calculating it from 0 to 1. So we're kind of mapping this up to our calculated cell size. And we're telling width, this is your new width. Let's run this. Okay, let's see where it is. This wasn't called width, it was called wide. There we go. There we go. So as I move down here, they're getting big. As I'm moving farther away over here, we see that they start getting small down there. Right? Still seem to be a little bit off right now. But we can see that these adjustments are happening on screen. We get closer to them, they get bigger. You get farther away, and at least the ones way at the end are getting small. We seem to have a little bit of something funky going on here, so let's check it out. Okay, one of the things we should probably do we're doing the target plus equals to offset x. We're plopping the blocks in. We're looping through the blocks. Oh, of course. Let's explain what's going on here. Why it's not working as I was expecting it to. I was easing the target inside of my pointer move event. This actually means that if I stop moving, it stops easing. And so that's what we were seeing it. I was moving it a little bit, but it only calculated the easing to a certain degree. This easing should happen regardless if I'm moving or not. So in order to do that, we would introduce, we have our target X and our target Y. So I'm going to create a pointer X and a pointer Y. So whenever I move, I'm going to set my target X and my target Y to the offset, just as we said before. Because I'm not going to have the target control everything, I'm going to, the target will always be fixed to wherever my pointer is. My pointer variable. Okay, so let's come and check this out. Pointer X, pointer Y. So in my draw loop, because this is always looping, here is where I want to say pointer X is plus equal to, and again, where we want to be, minus where we are, times a percentage. Pointer Y is plus equal to where we want to be, minus where we are, times a percentage. So as we're calculating this, we don't calculate it against target X, we calculate it against pointer X and pointer Y. Let me come back and double check my, so this is float width, wide, call space render. Property is called wide here, and it's wide here, so this should be working. Let's check it out. There we go, it's growing more as I come along. We're still getting an animation, but it seems to still be a little bit off. So we'll have to figure that out. Okay, let's go back. I think we're going to find the two differences right here. Let's tweak some of these values. Here on call space, because we're dealing with a very wide sketch in this case. It's 1200 by 600. I'm going to drop this down to rows space, which is a little bit it's a little bit shorter. And over here where we were fudging this 0.6, I'm going to make it even more obvious by changing that to 0.3. If I run this now, there we go. We see a little bit more graceful animation. The closer I get, it's nice and big, whereas farther away, we see that it has it gets smaller and then it starts fading back up the farther away we go. Just ever so subtle. Good. Now this is on controlling size. It really comes into play when we start dealing with rotation, because we see that each one of these guys, they have a line bar. The line bars are getting very big, but since nothing's spinning, you really can't tell the effect. So let's take care of rotation now. It's already in our draw matrix for every block. So let's come back. And now let's finally use this A10-2 function we had. We've done everything, but we come down into our draw loop. So here's how we've been able to take care of everything so far. We've calculated our steps to figure out how wide it will be based on how far away we are. But this dx and this dy also gives us the x and y that the A10 function needs. Let's look at what it looks like. Here's how it goes. We're going to, once we calculate the wide, let's do a real-time calculation for an angle. And we're going to do A10-2. A10-2 is going to give it back to us in angles. If you give it an x and y, it'll say, here's the angle to point to that x and y. But A10-2 requires you to give it the y first. It's the way the software works, but at least it's the same in most creative coding languages. So Math A10-2, always tell what the distance is in y first, do a comma, then do the distance in x. This is going to give you the angle. So at that point, you say blocks I dot rotation is equal to angle. So these two extra lines of code is all it takes, because we've already done the hard work. We already calculated the distance in x and the distance in y of the triangle. That gave us more or less what scale we wanted to play with. But more importantly, we could figure out using A10-2 the direction of anything to each other. In this case, it's going to be the direction of this block pointing toward the pointer. That all happens with this one line of code. It's very, very powerful. Once we get that line of code, we throw it down into rotation. Let's make sure in our rendering stack that we were already taking care of rotation. Sure enough, in our rendering stack, we were pushing and popping the matrix, translating it, and right here, we were already taking care of rotation. All we needed to do was run it. So at this point, if we do run, we'll see a very, very different effect now. What went to kind of scale, we now have this very, very cool, I think. Let me go full screen. As we move around, now we can really see the effect of our scale tweaking with the element. When it was just scale, it was kind of lacking something. But now that we can see that as I move the line, every single particle is rotating away or to point in the opposite direction of where it takes to point to the cursor, right? So I move this around, and this can start creating a using scale and using rotation, we get to create this very cool fisheye effect. You might have seen online in various websites these different types of menu systems, right? As you move over them, they kind of fisheye and balloon out. This is how they're doing it. The rotation, it's only one line of code, Math A10-2. What's the difference in Y? What's the difference in X? I will return to you the angle to that, you know, to whatever those two elements are. So every time we're drawing a circle, we're drawing it, we're plotting its distance, and we can see the closer I am, the longer the stick is, but then it's always variable based on where I'm moving my mouse. So if I move my mouse in a circle around one of these points, we'll see that it'll rotate its radius around. As I move farther away, its radius will shrink down the farther I get. All right. So at this point, we've covered the hardest of the math. We covered sine and cosine, and golden ratio, and now we've covered the last part of trigonometry with Math A10-2. With these three things, sine, cosine, and A10-2, please study these two sketches, these two lessons that we went over, tweak the numbers, get a sense for them, dive deep into the golden ratio. You'll be amazed at what you can do now that you have this kind of tool set. These are the main three tools mathematically you have as creative coding to get started. There are a lot more other things you can do, but these are the ones that most people struggle with. Congratulations, you've gone through both of the lessons on this. From here on out, let's get back to more creative coding. Hey, thank you very much.